This is probably an oversimplification, but one could say that the story of salvation in the Bible is somewhat similar to a mystery novel. You know, mystery novels start out with the first chapter or two where everything's just perfect, everything's in order, everyone loves one another, and then a murder happens or some other transgression and things just spin off into chaos and start falling apart. And then there are various plot twists, you know, a lead here that goes nowhere and a lead there that goes nowhere, and it just doesn't seem to be resolved until you get to the final chapter, and there someone resolves the mystery and everything comes back together again. Genesis is the first book in the Bible, and it talks about the first creation, and that creation is all in order. The 6 days and, you know, the beautiful description of how everything is all in place and there's harmony in the Garden of Eden and everything's climate controlled and everybody gets along with everybody else, and then sin happens and it devolves into chaos. Okay, in biblical imagery, chaos is symbolized by the sea, because Genesis's notion is that the earth was covered completely with water, and then it dried out, which is God's hand drying out, separating the sea from the dry land so that humans could have a safe place to dwell. Well, modern science tells us that that was probably true, that, you know, for eons the earth was completely covered with water, and then over time it evaporated and you had sea and dry land. But sea, ocean, symbolized for biblical people chaos, evil. That's where the monsters of the deep live. That's where you can shipwreck. That's where you can drown, flood. You know, water has positive images, but the Bible often uses negative images for water as well. And so after the sin of Adam and Eve, then you have fratricide, Cain kills Abel, and this cascading down into deeper and deeper chaos until God finally gives up and he floods the earth again, water everywhere, and the only thing left is Noah and his family and those animals on the ark. So in other words, it's a new creation story. God is trying again to bring order into chaos. But the story of the Old Testament is sin and reconciliation and sin and reconciliation. And, you know, there are the prophets and the judges and the kings and all these attempts to bring some kind of order back into things, some kind of holiness, some kind of godliness, because Genesis said we are created in God's image. And yet it always seems to lead nowhere. It's looking for some final resolution, and people begin to think, dream about a Messiah who's going to come and bring that order back into existence that has been lost by sin, and that, of course, is Christ. So we're in the final chapter now. The Bible talks about these being the last days. Our second reading today is from the last book in the Bible, and there John has this vision of the new Jerusalem coming out of heaven, because God always comes toward us. God doesn't wait for us to find God, but God is always the active one. And we respond with faith, but the first action, the prior action, is on God's part. And so the new Jerusalem comes down out of heaven, and the sea is no more. That symbol of evil and chaos and destruction, loss, mourning, all that, gone. Doesn't exist in the kingdom. The voice from the throne says, "See, I make all things new." So the end of the story is really the beginning. You know, most novels end something like, "And they lived happily ever after." You know, there's a conclusion. This is the end. But in the Bible, the end is the beginning. And so, "See, I make all things new." This is a new creation in Christ that is the creation not of flesh, but of grace. And this is the, Christ is the firstborn from the dead, the first one to conquer death. And so mourning and sadness are gone in the kingdom. There's only life, and there's only joy. And one of the best ways that biblical authors can image this reunion of God and humanity is with a marriage. And so the New Jerusalem is decked out like a bride prepared to meet her husband. And the husband is Christ. The bride is the church. And so even Jesus says, when he's trying to image the kingdom for them, he says, it's like a king who threw a wedding banquet for his son. The king is God the Father, the son is Christ, the bride is the church. And so we're going on into eternity in this new creation, this new age of grace. And so what does that look like in our present day, which is, these are the final days, but what does that look like? Jesus, God, in human flesh, came to reveal to us, first of all, who God really is, and then, secondly, who we are in response to that. So, what does he reveal about God? Well, God is the dying one. God is the servant. Our gospel today, after Judas has left, then Jesus is saying farewell to his disciples, and this is just after he has washed their feet. And so Jesus, who is Lord and Master, becomes the servant, and he washes the feet of the disciples, and he's indiscriminate about that. He knows that Judas is going to betray him, and yet he washes Judas's feet anyway. He knows that Peter is going to deny him three times, and yet, without any conditions, he washes Peter's feet. And then doing that in the context of knowing that the next day he's going to die a horrible death on the cross for them, for the ones who betrayed and denied him, for the soldiers, for the chief priests and the elders and the ones who condemned him. He's going to die for them. This is the revelation of who God is. God is the one who loves despite our unworthiness. God is the one who gives his life for us despite the fact that we are sinning against him. St. Paul says the miracle is that God didn't wait for us to become perfected. He died while we were still sinners. Well, that's you and me, you know. We're still sinners. Even though these are the final days, and even though Christ has already ushered in the new age of grace, we're still kind of stuck in our sin. So Jesus says, I give you a new commandment. Love one another. So what's new about that? I mean, didn't the Old Testament say, love God and your neighbor? But this is not love God and your neighbor. It's just love one another. As I have loved you. In other words, become servant to each other. Go to the death for each other. And again, what better image for that than marriage? That's why marriage is a sacrament, because it's until death do us part. You know, the complete gift of self. And the thrill and fear at the same time of falling in love, where you would just, you're just spinning out of control. You don't know how to control this, and yet there's something so thrilling about it. You don't want to control it. You just want to do it. You just want to be with that person. And you can't stand to be apart from them, because this is one of the best things that ever happened to you. Okay, this is the, God's love for us is that times a million. You know, it's infinite. Well, this is a tall order for us. It's difficult for us to be servant to people that we don't like or who don't like us. It's difficult even to have a healthy conversation with someone who violently disagrees with us. It's difficult for us to lay down our lives. We're all afraid of death. And we all put conditions on our love. We're all bilateral lovers. I'll give this to you if you give that back to me. I'm always expecting something back. Jesus isn't expecting anything back from Judas or Peter or anybody else. There are no conditions put on his love. Again, a tall order for us. It seems almost impossible for us to do that. One of the things that helps us on the way to that is the Eucharist. This is the memorial of what he did for us, his death and resurrection. This is the memorial of the Last Supper. And he says, do this in memory of me. And what does he mean by this? Well, he means take and eat, take and drink, commune with God in the Eucharist. But he also means wash each other's feet. The antecedent of this is both of those. And so we practice ritually here this laying down of life. We spiritually lay down our lives on the altar with Christ. And that's good practice for us. And you know, don't worry too much about being false or hypocritical about that. Just do it. Because God isn't worried about your hypocrisy. God just wants your heart. And so doing this here ritually gives us the grace we need to go out there and put flesh on it, you know, to live it in the world. And we're going to fail over and over again. The story isn't over. It's just beginning. And every time we sign ourselves in that font, it's like baptism. It's like a new beginning. Because this resolve needs to be refreshed and renewed over and over again. And we need to trust that God is patient with us and that God is gracing us all the time and giving us what we need to get better and better at this as life goes on.